Hey, welcome to The Revolutionized Mind, a platform about all things mental health. I'm your host, Angelica Galluzzo, and on this show, we use real stories and eye-opening conversations to make you feel less alone and a little more optimistic about what's ahead of you. Come on a journey with me. Bring your most authentic self and let's revolutionize the mind. Reforming society, repairing your mentality, restoring your life. This is The Revolutionized Mind. Hello, hello. Welcome to episode, what is this? 46? Fuck, good start, Jill. I think it's 46. Hi, welcome. Let's try that again. I hope everybody's doing well. It's Friday. That means it's the weekend. I hope you can take some time off for yourself over the next few days and just really unwind from whatever kind of week you had. So I was a little bit sick when we did this interview, and you can hear it in my voice. So first of all, I'm going to apologize for that. But second of all, I feel like I literally blacked out while we were talking because I didn't realize until when I did the editing that this was probably one of like my favorite conversations I've ever had on this podcast, because I feel like so much of what we talked about are things that a lot of people are thinking or that have dealt with over the last couple of years, especially with everything going on in the world. So I feel like our guest Ryan really provided a lot of key insight and just like general but super important advice to deal with these things on our own and with like friends on social media and so many other things. So I just feel like this episode really addresses a lot of important issues that like ordinary everyday people will call them, people like me, people like you, things that we just deal with on an everyday basis. And I think we all know that there's just so much going on in the world right now, and it's so hard to have an opinion on everything, to make a public comment on everything, to show other people that you're involved in social, cultural, whatever issues are going on, but also doing the inner work that you're supposed to be doing that nobody else sees. And there's just so, it's such a complicated topic that I think in a lot of these things, we've really lost the focus of what the end goal is. And I don't know, we talk about it more in the episode. So hopefully what we say will resonate with you and hopefully give you some new things to think about. So after that little rant, I am going to play the episode. I hope you enjoy. So today I'm here with Ryan Forsyth from the Life in Red podcast, who I had the honor of being a guest on his podcast, and now I'm excited to have him on mine and sit down and chat and hear a little bit more about him. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. And I really enjoyed our chat. I think we got a lot out of it. So I'm looking forward to being on the other side of the microphone for once.
Yeah, it's exciting. It feels really different being on the other side. It's like a whole different persona you have to take on.
Exactly. Yeah, you're kind of going with like the other person's setup, but you also pick up a lot too, which I think is cool. It's like, well, how do other people like start their show? How do they sort of like navigate conversations? And I don't know, I always enjoy being on it, both sides.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure. Do you want to start off by telling us a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'll do the Coles notes and then we can kind of get into sort of anything you'd like to get in.
Sounds good.
My Twitter bio is I'm an award-winning mental health speaker and advocate. So I've been advocating for mental health since 2015. So about, what is that, 7 years now. And publicly speaking on mental health, sort of sharing my story and I guess navigating more into a community leader role about mental health since about 2018. So that's a big part of my life, advocating on social media, doing things like this, going on TV. I'm actually giving a mental health presentation for my company tomorrow, which is pretty exciting and a definitely like a change of pace, bringing my mental health world into my work world. I have my podcast, which is called Life in Red. As you said, you were a recent guest. That's something I've been doing for the last three and a half years, almost four. We're at 132 episodes, I believe. So that's been an exciting journey for me. My day job, I work in radio. So I make radio contests, events, marketing, communications, and everything that that kind of entails. And those are sort of like the big three pillars of my life, I guess you could say. I like playing sports. I've played hockey all my life as a goalie. I like tattoos. I got tattoos and all that stuff. So that's a little bit, I guess, the less important stuff. But I also love music. So that's a little bit about me.
Amazing. Well, yeah, it's good to know those less important, quote unquote, things, because it makes up who you are. So that's awesome. Why did you actually begin your advocacy journey? Was it something that you went through? Was it something that you just became passionate about? Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about that?
I guess I never meant to sort of fall into it. It was never really a goal of mine, but I struggled with mental illness pretty much my entire adult life. And then going back to even when I was 12 years old, suffering from panic attacks and anxiety. When I was 21, I was navigating sort of the difficult part in everybody's life, right? Like you graduate university or college, what you knew as a kid and growing up, it's all sort of changed. Everybody in your life has sort of went their separate ways. You know, you no longer have the routine of going to school. You're quote unquote an adult and you're supposed to start to figure out your life by then. And so for everybody, I think it's a very tumultuous time. Compound on that, it's also a time when mental illness and mental health struggles really starts to like manifest in people that might exhibit those behaviors the rest of their life. And that's kind of what was happening to me. And at the time, this was about 2012, we were like, Bellet's Talk Day was sort of like a recent thing. No one was super talking about it a lot. Mental health was starting to make its way into the conversation, but we still didn't really know a lot and there was still a lot of stigma. So the stuff that I was suffering with, I didn't really understand. Like I knew sort of something cognitively was wrong. I didn't really know I should be telling anybody about it. I didn't realize how much of a problem it was. And it came to a point when sort of all the internal factors and the external factors made a headway and came together and it just became a little too much. And I tried to take my life. From that point, I realized I did sort of need to get some help. So I went and saw my doctor. Obviously, if you ever reach that sort of crisis point, you know that something's not okay. So I got help. I did a little bit of therapy. I got put on medication and things started to get a little bit better. But it's always been a lot of ups and downs for me, a lot of peaks and valleys. So as I started to progress into my adult life and navigating all those sorts of things, knowing that I was living with a mental illness, it was a Bellet's Talk Day in 2015 that I just got inspired by how many people were sharing their stories and seeing how much support they were getting. And I guess I just felt sort of safe and comfortable enough to share a little bit about my story publicly on Twitter specifically. Now, while my family knew that I was like depressed and had anxiety and was struggling, I didn't tell anybody about the suicide attempt, not even my doctor. And I... silly me, that tweet that I made, a little tweet thread, I included that without really like talking to anybody about it first, which was a mistake in hindsight, but that's how I went about it. And what I gathered from that is a lot of people supported me. So not only people that I knew in my life, like friends and family, the people you would think that would really want to support you, but a lot of people that like, I would say acquaintances or that like I was sort of friends with in high school that we sort of like ran in the same friend groups, but I wouldn't really say we're like friends, like they were reaching out and supporting me. And then the most shocking thing of all was how many strangers were reaching out, supporting me and sharing their story with me. And it was kind of a light bulb moment where I realized that for whatever reason, me sharing my story, but now you know that kind of anybody sharing their story, it does have some sort of power for a lot of people when they see it. And especially people who saw me, because you know, before that point, and even now, I'm very much like a flamboyant sort of out there, making people laugh, making people happy, very sort of an extrovert, right? Like I'm always out there and don't really have a problem sort of being a public face to things. And that's not usually the face that you attribute to depression. So it kind of like took a lot of people back, but realized that, you know, anybody can sort of suffer regardless of how you may present on the outside or what you look like or any sort of your background. So it was a light bulb moment for me, like I said. And from that point forward, I just was like, okay, well, if it's helping, I don't mind sharing, and I'll just continue to do so.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I know that's not an easy thing to even admit yourself, let alone like post it publicly. And just one thing I wanted to ask, was there any repercussions like with your family or friends when you did share that suicide attempt online, if you didn't tell them first personally and like the first space they saw it was online? How did they react to that?
There was nothing overt, but I definitely think it hurt them, right? Like, you know what's funny? We never even have really like talked about how it impacted them. But I think deep down, finding that out, like finding out your son or your friend, and then finding it on social media is like, it's never a good thing to find out things on social media anyway. So to find that out, I think it definitely did sort of hurt them deep down and really was shocking. But at the same time, I credit all of everybody that I may have affected with that poor decision, that nobody made it about them. And they were just completely in supportive of me. And, you know, maybe that's a good question. I sit down with some of those people and be like, hey, like, I'm sorry for doing that. Cause that's not, I was asked that once at a presentation. They're like, how did they react? And I honestly didn't even know. And I kind of started to tear up, and I'm sure it really hurt. And I do feel really bad about it and guilty to this day. So can't go back though.
The only reason why I do ask that is because I think it's sometimes easier to just share your story with people who you don't know, or to just like type it out and post it without really thinking about what you're saying or who it's going to impact. And you're really only focusing on the positive aspects of all these strangers that you're going to impact, not really like those personal connections. And I've done the same thing. I've like shared things on this podcast or social media, and some of my close family and friends are like, wait, what? We didn't know that happened. Like, can you expand on that? But sometimes it is just easier to talk and share things with people that you don't know, because there's less of that, like, I guess, pressure to actually explain. Because when it does get into those close relationships, they sometimes ask like, why? What could I have done better? But it's not really about them. And it's, I think it just takes some of that pressure off. So I wanted to hear a little bit more about that. But that's awesome that you did use your experiences to start helping people. And But Let's Talk Day is actually the first day that I shared my story. I'm not sure what year it was. So that's awesome that a campaign like that really does inspire people to talk. And just seeing the support that you get from so many people who will just reach out to you and share their story, whether you know them or not, it's really, really inspiring for both the sharer and the consumer of that information.
But Let's Talk Day, I get it. It's complicated. It is a complicated day. There's there's a lot of pros and cons to it as a corporation and the practices that Bell may do. You know, I work in media. I am not ignorant to the fact of what happens there. Mm-hmm. Do I think that we're a little bit past the point of Bell Let's Talk Day for a bit? I do. I think there's room now for more funding, harder conversations that maybe not, like, social media might not be the best place to have, talking about more complex and severe mental illnesses, better policy, those types of things. I think while there is still stigma, I think the story sharing and the acceptance of it, I think, has really made a lot of strides. But similar to you, similar to me, similar to a lot of people I've talked to over the years, Bell Let's Talk Day was the catalyst for them either sharing their story publicly or with somebody, or finding the inspiration or education to becoming a lot more accepting to what mental illness is. And also to that, I know this is something you brought up on our episode, the differences between mental health and mental illness, and that you don't necessarily need to be quote unquote mentally ill to be experiencing mental health challenges, or just having a broader, more general knowledge and the concept of mental health and mental well-being and taking care of our brains as much as we take care of our physical health. So I think it's been a very important day over the years. No question. I think we can do a lot more at this point, because as more and more people are coming for help and to talk, the resources aren't necessarily there for them to do so in a professional capacity. But there's no question the impacts that it's had on mental health, especially here in Canada.
Yeah, every year I think you get half your social media feed talking shit about Bell, saying like, I'm not supporting this campaign. If you do, you're performative, blah, 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 blah. And then you get the other half like actually sharing their story and supporting other people. And like, there's so many behind the scenes things that I'm just not going to get into. But regardless, I will never take away the fact that it does encourage people to talk. It does keep the conversation going. It does inspire people to open up about what they're going through. And I think that's a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think it has to be either or, in my opinion. I'm very much of the fact that I can criticize the corporate practices while also acknowledging the importance of the day. I think that's a issue as society at large, that we want to look at things one way or the other and not sort of a blend, because everything has nuance and is complex. But like I said, it's helped a lot of people. There's no question. And if people choose not to participate, especially now, that is fine. But I would hope that they are making strides in other areas, whether that is donating, whether that is volunteering, whatever way that you are able to do so and to show up meaningfully. If you choose not to participate in a day like that, okay, what else are you doing? How else are you helping? How are you making the movement and our mission to help people, what are you doing? Because I don't think it's acceptable anymore for us to be like, well, I don't agree with that, so I'm not going to do anything. You need to do something.
Yeah, so kind of running along that with like the social issues, I know a lot of what you talk about too is like the cultural and societal things that we see that impact people's mental health directly. And something you said when we first talked was that you like to like address toxic masculinity from kind of like a feminine perspective. And I've honestly been thinking about that ever since we first talked. So can you expand on that a little bit more? And maybe like, has actually opening up about your mental health and being a public advocate impacted that toxic masculinity, and have people said things to you? Like, what has that experience been like for you?
Yeah, it 100% has helped me address sort of those more traits. And I think when we talk about masculinity, I think one of the biggest things men experience and are conditioned is that any form of displaying weakness or vulnerability is sort of like bad, or it's going to negatively affect you. And don't get me wrong, there are certain cases and instances and people that can, but for the large majority, I think when we talk about things like masculinity or the patriarchy, I mean, men's mental health sort of like affects everybody in a way. Like, it's very sort of, there's like a big ripple effect. There's a lot of collateral, right? Like, we see it in dating, we see it in violence, we see it in racism, that, you know, if some men especially are in a very negative mental health state, there's a lot of collateral damage that comes with that. So men taking care of their mental health is sort of one of the easiest, I shouldn't say easy, but it's one of like those first steps that we can do, that if men start to address things themselves and start to work on themselves to be better, you know, that's a great step on making the world a better place, making our communities a better place, and sort of interpersonal relationships, whether it's friendships or dating relationships, like that better. So that's like a huge thing I believe in, that we can start to really address before we really start talking about some of those long lasting systemic like policy changes that are going to help. I'm a huge believer in a healthier version of masculinity. And this is kind of like a 2-year project now I've been working on. It really started during the pandemic. And basically when I give a speech or when I'm talking to people about this idea, I find, and I really struggled with it at the beginning, that when we have this conversation on social media, it's very sort of narrow-minded. People really want men to act in a particular way and sort of vilify certain aspects of maybe masculinity, which isn't really masculinity. It's just traditionally defined as such. So something like sports, where we all sort of, like, anybody can participate in sports regardless of sex or gender. But, you know, traditionally, because of just how history has worked and men, like, men have often controlled that space. So sometimes it gets vilified as, like, as a negative. And while there's definitely negative aspects of things like hockey culture, as I'm sure you know, I know you're an athlete. I'm sure you've experienced your fair share of misogyny and sexist comments when it comes to women's sports. It's not inherently bad. So what I like to do, what my mission is not really vilify any particular aspect of any life that men especially maybe tend to enjoy more than women or non-binary people. It's more, you can sort of choose and you don't have to give up anything that you might enjoy, but you need to realize how it affects the community at large, society at large, how it's affecting people in your life. So you're allowed to enjoy what you enjoy, but what you need to realize is when that becomes toxic, and that's when it either is hurting other people or it's hurting yourself. That's where things start to really branch off. So what I want men to do is not only take care of other people and listen to other voices and just understand a much healthier and broader perspective of life, but also take care of themselves internally, work on their issues, whether that be anger, whether that be sexism, racism, whatever, go to therapy, talk about it, hash it out the way you need to, so you can participate in society in a lot healthier way, which, going back to the beginning of what I said, will make it a much healthier place for everybody to be included. That's the biggest part of my message, is nothing is evil, inherently evil, really. You are allowed to enjoy what you enjoy, but recognize when things are starting to become toxic. And that's what kind of makes the conversation around toxic masculinity. It's when your inherent masculinity or masculine traits are making it toxic for yourself and other people. So that's just what I want to get across to men, because I just find when we start to really say, no, this is good, this is bad, you get people who start becoming defensive and are very non-receptive to this information. And then maybe they start to go off a deeper end. Maybe they just don't understand, but they put up a wall, and then it's even harder to reach them and sort of coach them into this space of a better emotional well-being.
I love your entire answer. And I think, like, what you said at the beginning is a perfect response, because everything is so connected. And, like, men's mental health, when people say that, I think they just say, like, or they assume it's just men dealing with their mental health, but they don't realize the larger impact that it does have. And like you said, it affects everybody's relationships. It's the way men just carry themselves in the world. You see it in corporate, you see it in just social relationships, you see it in sports, you see it in the media. And like, this perception that men walk around with then impacts the way that women or other non-binary people view them and talk to them, because then it just changes the way that we communicate. And I think it's so harmful the way that, like, gender, well, traditional gender roles, like when we're children, and just the language that's used and how we bring up these children and the way that they, like, adapt to society. And the media does have such a large role in this, because it's what we see on screen. It's how these men are actually behaving, these teenagers who are treating women like shit, these men who are playing sports or the traditional jocks. And like, then men watch this and they're like, oh, we need to be like that too in order to be respected and in order to be, like, called a real man. And it's actually so harmful in more ways than I think people choose to admit. And like you said, I think just, like, acknowledging those first steps and actually allowing men to take that, like, healthy version and just say that, like, it's okay to be vulnerable, it's okay to talk about these things, and I don't need to be this, like, huge macho man all the time, because feelings are real. It's okay to, like, express these things, and I don't need to be this big alpha person all the time in order to, like, be considered successful or whatever.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point about the media and culture and society and how we view it. And one of the biggest things I've ever taken away from my podcast is how much representation matters. But representation goes both ways. So when we see, you know, we want to see LGBTQ couples in a natural state. We want to see trans people on screen, Black people on screen, Indigenous people on screen, Asian people on screen, right? All of that in the, not as the token character, but as like just living lives normally as part of the story, right? That's important. But on the flip side of that, what we've seen pretty much up to this point is kind of exactly what you illustrated, was there's like certain ways that bosses and managers and CEOs need to act. You know, they need to, you know, you get yelling or sternness or like no empathy because it's business, right? We got to make the money, like blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as much as we want to see more, because what you see on TV is like you, a lot of people emulate that, especially as a younger age. Like that's like, whether it's fact or fiction, people are like, oh, like this is how people act. It, people can become very impressionable. And we see it, especially in the workplace, is sometimes women feel like they have to be more like the angry man in order to succeed. When we're really starting to realize like that's not the right way to be a leader or a manager, right? Like I laugh at the term alpha because like, what does that really mean? Like, sure, people might follow you because they're afraid of you and they might be afraid of the repercussions. And like, don't get me wrong. Like sometimes I like a good, like, you know, F the world, like get to work sort of like, I don't know, inspirational speech where I'm like, yeah, like, let's go. Like, I'm not saying like there's a, not a time and a place sometimes for those types of things. But at the larger scale, I know like if you have a leader that listens, communicates well, has empathy, I think you are much more prone to follow them. And, you know, when you're nurtured and well respected, I think the work output and what you're able to give and your own emotional well-being is better. So I always laugh that we think that this sort of like alpha leader, whatever, has to be this certain figure that's just stronger than everybody and whenever. But when in reality, I think most people don't really respect that. They follow out of fear, or they follow sort of because they're the loudest, and you know, a lot of us don't like conflict, so we're like, okay, like whatever, yeah, sure, go do your thing. And you know, to me, that's the patriarchy. That's where, you know, you can say it hurts us all, because it models this sort of system and these people that of what we think things should be like, when in reality they shouldn't. It's actually incredibly harmful, and it hurts men, it hurts women, it hurts all folks. So I mean, that's just the biggest message like I like to carry forward as well. To me, an alpha is somebody, an alpha but like a leader, somebody who I won't follow and respect, is somebody who takes off, like looks after people, takes care of the community, like just genuinely cares, because I think that's the best way to get results, not sort of pushing people to their limits and about to break, and sort of this all or nothing, win at all costs mentality.
I'm going to bring this up because it's related to the media piece quickly, but my sister and I were watching A Cinderella Story the other night, like classic Disney movie with Hilary Duff. And we were just kind of mentioning all the sexist, the racist like comments that were made. And we were sitting there, we're like, this would never fly today. Like it's not okay to be said, we know better, whatever. But then I was sitting there and I was like, yes, it wouldn't fly, but what if like what we knew now was shown in the media when we were growing up? Because obviously we were consuming this type of media, these comments were made, we internalized it, and we're like, okay, these things are normal, we're allowed to say it, blah, blah, blah. But like, if we knew what we knew now, and we did not consume those things, like, I feel like we would be much different people. And we would not even have these ideas, like these comments wouldn't be made, we wouldn't treat people the way we do. And I think you can even relate it to like the alpha male thing, because in all these movies, that's the character that everybody fears. That's the character that runs the world. And everybody's like, oh, we need to be like him because he's the most successful. And I think just like, we don't even acknowledge that because we just watch TV growing up. We listen to music, we do all these things and it like affects us, but we don't really acknowledge that because it just like flows into us so easily. But like, if media was so much better and like politically correct when we were younger, like hopefully it's changing now. We are seeing more same-sex couples on screen. We are seeing more cultural diverse representation of different people. And hopefully more politically correct comments being made. And there's such a fine line, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, we're like too sensitive these days and all that stuff. But like, yes, but also no, because these things are just not okay to say, and they make people feel like shit. They're not okay to like put people down. And I think you can still like get that comedy or get that laugh in just while being politically correct and respectful. So it's an interesting thing to think about, and just like how media will change moving forward.
Yeah, well, we'll see the results sort of in the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. We're already starting to see the effects of what growing up on social media has on, you know, Generation Z and some younger folks. But I find it interesting. Like, I love history. I love everything about history. I love learning about it. I love documentaries. And one of the things that I find so particularly fascinating is a lot of the conversations we're having right now have sort of like always been happening. There's not a lot different now than there was in the 60s, especially. What the difference is the media was controlled by white men, still is, to a lesser degree. But when you look at it from that lens, you know, what's changed? So I think we have to remember that, as frustratingly and painful, that things are better than they once were. It's slow. It's a very slow progress, but we're making there. So it's hard to say, you know, if we had what we had today back then, it would be better, because in 10 years, it's going to be different. And then we'll be saying the same thing. So we're sort of like just learning and evolving and growing, which is a big thing. But what we're also having now is social media, which no longer allows sort of a central hub of media, whether that be Hollywood, whether we're talking about news and mainstream media, which has always also been predominantly white and white stories and white storytellers. We don't not necessarily rely on them as much as we do, because they're gatekeepers of the stories. Whereas social media, we now allow like every voice basically to say their piece and what they think. And I love always saying, like, more than one thing can be true at once. Like, for sure, people are a lot more sensitive these days. And do a lot of people take things too far? Absolutely. One of my favorite takes is, like, you know, people who are chronically online, right? Like, if you're always online, you think the world is, you know, burning. But if you go talk to a couple people face to face, you're like, oh, actually, like, people aren't that bad. Like, it's actually okay. But at the same time, you're right. Like, you look at old movies. I mean, try watching Friends now. Like, still like a decent show, but a lot of the jokes and themes, like they're not holding up. It's just, it's not the same. We know a lot more. And a lot of people, it accelerated so quickly instead of happening very gradually, like people are used to, because of social media. So a lot of people are like, oh my God, like, oh, this just came out of nowhere. Like, I don't know what to do. And it can become very, very overwhelming for a lot of people. So I think it's important that we like really take that step back and be like, okay, like, what am I hearing? What am I watching? All those things, and really try to think through them, whether that's through therapy and talking about it with your friends, people you trust, but really sitting with it. Because at face value, a lot of the stuff, especially in particular to racism, or, you know, me as a straight white man, you know, the internet is mad at straight white men a lot. So like, I'm kind of like, whoa, like, I've never done anything. But you really have to like sort of like parse that out and be like, oh, okay, you know, they're not talking about me personally. This is an important idea. How can I contribute in a meaningful way? You know, it's tough. There's a lot to intake right now. There is a lot to process, and it is sort of our job to do so. But it's also hard to do that with everything happening in the world. Like, we're still in a pandemic. There's like Russia and Ukraine. I mean, there's still like, we never fixed Afghanistan. I mean, there's still genocide in China. There's Yemen still having a famine. You know, there's just still so much going on, so much stuff to know. So that's why it's important we always take that step back and really like talk these things out, so we can process them and engage with them in a healthier way, and we can move forward in a much healthier way. Because as I'm sure you've noticed, the world feels a little bit more polarized right now. Feels a lot of, you know, a lot of people are yelling at each other and really mad at each other. And that's not going to fix anything moving forward. So we all got to sort of deal with this in our own way and then and engage in the conversations in a lot healthier way.
I think that advice that you shared is like very subtle, but very important, because as we're scrolling through social media, like we are consuming a crazy amount of information that we were never meant to consume, because the human brain is just not really wired that way. But we know so much, and just like constantly scrolling, we can go from the war to the pandemic to straight white men to anything, and it affects us so much. And I think just like taking a second to really check in with yourself and just say like, okay, how does this make me feel? What are my thoughts towards it? What are other people saying? How can I like value what they're saying, but also have my own opinion? And like you said, I think like finding those people that you can actually trust and talk with from both like a political, social, emotional stance, like you need to kind of cover everything, is important for you to actually like understand what's happening. But also like, it's okay if you don't have an opinion on everything, because there is so much going on and you don't need to. I think we were talking about this on your episode as well. Like, you don't need to publicly comment on everything. It's not always your place to say anything. And something you said too when we first talked, you said nobody needs to hear my voice on like women's issues or on like Black Lives Matter things. Like, you would rather have these people come in and share their experiences, and what you can do as an ally is like amp their voice by sharing what they share and to kind of like just provide that safe space for them. So I think that's another thing that a lot of people struggle with, and is another very polarized thing, because everybody thinks that everybody needs to have a say on everything. But if it's not right, then you're a horrible person.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of social pressure, especially on social media, to make sort of comment or make some sort of like post in support. And I'm not necessarily saying that that is a bad thing. I mean, it's nice for communities to know that people support whatever's going on. It's not insignificant. But I think we get lost too much in the fact that, like, you know, sharing something to our Instagram story is somehow going to solve the problem. And people are going to be like, well, that's like, it's raising awareness. It's like, but to who? Because everyone who probably follows you is probably along the same political spectrum, also sharing the same story. So like, if you do that, fine, but like, we need to find more meaningful ways to change. And it, you know, it goes beyond, you know, putting Black Lives Matter in your bio. It goes beyond sharing to your story. Or the worst is like saying, well, I'm an ally. It's like, for me, in every case, actions speak louder than words. That's always my big mantra, because I find so many people are all talk and not enough action. And the second part is another quote I like to use is like, maturing is realizing when your voice is needed and when it's not. And for me, you know, a lot of this stuff doesn't necessarily need my opinion or take. Like I said, even if I think I'm doing it to be supportive, like, that's taking up space, which somebody who maybe is much more knowledgeable or has direct experience, like, it's going to take away from them. So that's one of the biggest issues with social media, especially, I guess, what you could say on like the more left, liberal, democratic, wherever you're from, sort of side of whatever platform you're using. And I think just sometimes it's like a lot of the work you're going to do as any form of ally or any sort of person trying to, for lack of a better phrase, change the world, it's going to be internal. It's not going to be what you post on social media. It's not going to be the things you say. It's going to be the internal work you're doing to deal with your feelings and to deal with the thoughts that, you know, you have about whatever the subject might be. And then it's the work that nobody's going to see as well. So it's like, are you volunteering? Are you donating money? Are you whatever sort of other action you're pursuing to actually make meaningful change? We just get so caught up in this raising awareness and this opinion or take or voice of support. It's like, it's not enough. It's like, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel warm and rosy because you said there did something, but a lot of the work people aren't going to see. A lot of the work is going to be by yourself, and that's the most important work. So if you're not doing that side of it, it's like, don't even bother really saying anything about it. On the flip side, to say all of that, it's, you also mentioned, like, when we talked about it, it's like, you can't know everything and you can't give 100% on everything. So I think it's super important to be informed and to be knowledgeable and to support where you can. But it's impossible to give 100% on every single thing that's happening. What you can do is maybe give 100% to one or two things that personally or really affect you, or something that really is meaningful to you and you want to change. And if we all did that on one or two things instead of us all giving like 20% or 10% on everything, you know, I think we'd be a lot farther along than we actually are, because that's just like one aspect of life that's really important. So if it's any advice from this particular part of the conversation, it's to, you know, give, and if you have more, great, but if you only have a little bit, give 100% to one or two things that you care about, because that's better than sort of doing nothing for everything.
And would you say one of the things that like you give 100% to would be your podcast? Because I mean, like, not trying to toot my own horn, but more focusing on you and your podcast, like, I think having conversations is so impactful. Like, even if like neither of us, I know we talked about this, like, we're not getting thousands of downloads and views and listens, but like those few people that are listening, and then you get that positive feedback and they're like, wow, that really helped. That changed my perspective. That gave me a new idea to think about. Like, that is so impactful. So I know you said like a lot of the work that is important is internal, but I think it's also like putting this passion towards this platform now and like having other people come on and like give them that space to share. So kind of what are your thoughts on that? And like, what is the podcast to you, I guess?
There's two reasons why I really started it. One was I work in traditional media, so I understand how hard it is to like say everything you want to say in the small amount of time that sometimes traditional media gives you. Maybe they take things out of context, they pull quotes, they use headlines, clickbait, or they're just like, hey, we have a 5-minute segment. Can you talk about everything about, you know, trans issues or racism? And it's like, what? Like, it's, you can't do it. So I'm a much bigger fan of longer form content. I love being able to really get a little bit deeper into some things and just get direct experience from either experts or people who've lived it, like I mentioned before. And the second part of that is sort of around that whole conversation about the social media. I had a really hard time. It was kind of the height of the Me Too movement. And when I sort of joked about it, about like the sort of like the not all men thing. In 2018, like I was having a hard time sort of dealing with those conversations, because I'm like, oh my, like, you know, like I do all this great stuff and I've raised thousands for mental health and, you know, I've never done anything bad to a woman. Like why am I included in it? Right. I'm taking it very personally. And I think you see that with a lot of men. They take it very personal, and they sometimes, unfortunately, can start to veer on paths that what I call like the alt-right pipeline, right? Like they start feeling validated by sort of like, I'm not going to name the names, but you know, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Sort of like these people who are very validating towards men. And then the algorithm starts to take over, and then it starts to like push you down this like sort of like, ooh, like right-wing incels start to, you know, subreddits and very sketchy parts of the internet. And then all of a sudden they start a podcast about like complaining about women and dating. And you're like, oh my God, what the hell happened? So because of those two things, I was like, I need to talk about these things with people, because I know I am a safe and reasonable, empathetic person. So I can have these conversations and not become angry or defensive. I can come at it from a very human perspective, but I need to have them because I can't do it on social media. I wasn't mentally well enough. I wasn't emotionally strong enough to be having those conversations. So, you know, obviously with my network and mental health, like that's a big part of it. But over the years, like wanting to talk about more important things, whether it's about Indigenous issues or at the height of, you know, what happened, George Floyd's murder and having a Black Lives Matter conversation, or talking about politics and those effects. We're starting to see it a little bit more in traditional media, but like I still think it's missing something. And I mean, who am I? But like, you know, those are the types of things I do enjoy, because I love to learn and I love to hear from other people. And I just think, you know, I'm asking questions that I just feel that everybody's thinking. I'm not, you know, I don't know if you ever listened to like a government press conference, but it feels like it's like the questions. You're like, what the, like, that doesn't affect me. It doesn't matter. I feel like sometimes journalism and news gets really into like this elitist sort of political bubble when like, man, I just want to know, like, are my taxes going up? Are you going to have to pay more money? Am I getting money? Like, just give me the basics. So sometimes I feel like I'm just a normal guy just asking normal questions that I feel like a lot of people are just wondering when they hear someone talk about something like white privilege or talking about masculinity or feminism. Because in social media, it's very indirect, right? Like someone's just talking to a screen and you maybe have a question and then someone maybe misinterprets or and then it like snowballs and then people are fighting and all of a sudden your whole TikTok feed is based on these two people's drama that you've never even followed. Right? It like gets out of control. But by having a conversation, by bringing an actual voice that like you could meet if you really wanted to, and they're just pretty much a regular person doing something cool or interesting or having an interesting perspective, I think it just brings the human part of the conversation back to it. And I think that's important for us to grow, for us to actually make strides. I don't think anybody really interprets these things from social media very well. So that's like that's the gap I'm trying to fill. And I know it's helped people because they've told me, but you know, no offense to them. Less importantly, the ways it has helped me infinitely grow as a person, like it's honestly baffling who I was when I first started making the podcast to who I am today. Like it honestly blows my mind sometimes when I look back on it. It like it's just changed me so much. And that's what I kind of want to bring to people. Like, hey, if you just talk to a lot of people, like your perspective will change a lot. You know, there's a lot you can gain from other people. And you might not agree with everything they say, and it's fine to have disagreements or debates about certain things. But when you're not debating because you hate them, when you're just debating because you're discussing the idea, and you can pick and choose the sort of things that they say that you like and you want to implement in your own life. I think that goes for life. I think that goes for mental health. It goes in so many different ways. And you just become such a more well-rounded, holistic, emotionally intelligent person just by easily talking to people. And it's been like one of the most significant and greatest experiences of my life.
I love that. We love growth. That's amazing. That makes me so happy. And it's something I can really relate to because like just having conversations with ordinary people, like you said, like brings the human aspect back to it. And I like how you brought up like that elitist kind of thing, because again, a lot of what we consume is kind of geared towards this like class that none of us are a part of, like unless your dad's Justin Trudeau. But like, we need to ask these questions, and sometimes they might come off as like ignorant if we don't know maybe what white privilege is, or if we don't know what's going on in Indigenous communities. But again, we're not meant to know everything. So like, asking these genuine questions and wanting genuine answers and knowing like how you can use your voice, your platform, or just like your own brain to kind of, again, change the world. And then just like have these conversations changes people in more ways than you know, like not just for you, but now again, for the people that are listening to it. And I've been meaning to ask you this question. I've waited for this moment, but what is Life in Red? What does that mean? Where did you get that name from?
So like the short answer is like, it just came to me. My podcast journey is like funny. Like I was always thinking about it. Then one day I was like, I'm just going to do it. And working at a radio station, thankfully I had the resources. I just went into work on a Saturday and just sat in one of the production studios and made a podcast. So one is obviously like I'm a redhead, even though I'm like losing my hair now. The ginger, right? It's like the life through ginger's eyes. And the second is like, have you seen The Matrix?
Yes, but a long time ago.
So right, the red pill and the blue pill. The blue pill, you get to stay sort of in your sort of like your dream, the Matrix, right? The fantasy land where everything just seems great and fancy. And that's sort of like the privilege part, but the red pill will take you down the rabbit hole and you don't really know where it's going to go. And so it's like a play on that, that it's like, I don't know. I like to think of it as like really sort of breaking down sort of like the privileges a lot of us have and that I certainly grew up with. And that while the world can be a great place and humans can be a great place, like there's a lot of, like I've mentioned several times, there's a lot of work we need to do. And so hopefully I'm bringing you a conversation that's really going to make you think, to open your mind and to have some, obviously to learn something, but also to have more of a degree of empathy towards this certain maybe group of people or this conversation or this illness. Whatever the conversation might be. And don't get me wrong, sometimes they're not always super serious. Sometimes they're fun or about entertainment. But that's sort of like where the name came from. Just a fun little play on my hair and the Matrix.
I love that. Yeah, it makes sense now. I was kind of trying to like piece it together in my head and I'm like, no, let me just ask him before I like try to guess what it means. but yeah, no, that's awesome. And I love what you're doing. I love your podcast. And I guess wrapping up, I always like to ask, like, we'll wrap back to like that Ryan that was kind of struggling when you didn't really know what was going on with you. And like knowing what you do now, what would you tell him about life, about yourself, about like how it's okay to act?
That's a good question. I think.
Very broad question.
Yeah, I think. Obviously, the first one is talk to somebody, especially, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old Ryan, that, like, it's okay. Like, what you're going through is okay. It's actually, like, sort of like a morbid thought, but it's actually, like, pretty normal. Like, a lot of people are feeling this way, too. And it's okay to talk. The second part of that is, you know, whenever I start any form of like presentation or speech that I'm giving, I always, one of the first points I make when I'm sort of like setting it up is like, I am not perfect, because I think sometimes there's an expectation that when somebody is presenting or on a stage or on the other side of a screen that like, oh, they have their shit together, right? Like they've had done it and then they've come out on the other side and like now he's here to tell me all the things that I need to do the same. And it's like, whoa, like, I know a lot more than I did, but, no, I'm not perfect. I still make mistakes. I still struggle. I mean, I've been struggling the last little bit with some stuff. So like coming to this interview, I'm not 100% like emotionally or mentally. And I've certainly made a lot of like dumb mistakes in the past and in my life. I've hurt people that I didn't want to hurt. I, you know, did things that I'm not proud of. You know, it just, that's life, right? Like you do something and you hopefully learn from it. And I think that if I go back to myself as a young person, right, like I was growing up, I always had a large degree of empathy for people, but I sort of like either hid that because of societal pressures or peer pressure. You know, I think one of the biggest things I ever give people is like in my early like 20s, being a single man dating life, like I was sort of that like traditional F boy sort of stage where I didn't really care about people's feelings. I was just sort of like being that prototypical douchey guy, like, oh, I'm not ready for a relationship, but then act like I was in a relationship. And like hurting people, right? So I think the message to my younger self is it's okay to make mistakes. You're going to learn from them, but always have people's like realize what how your actions are going to impact people a lot more. You know, because that's some of the like the guilt that I still live with and still have to work through is me being a people pleaser and me being somebody who's trying to make the world better, knowing that I've hurt people makes me feel really guilty. And some of those people, all of them pretty much, didn't deserve to like have me hurt them. And in hindsight, it's not the biggest deal in the world. You know, I didn't crash down the government or I didn't do anything illegal. I just hurt people and I don't like that and it doesn't make me feel good. So realize how your actions, going back to the conversation about men's mental health, how your actions will have a ripple and collateral effect on other people. And, you know, try to always have their well-being and their sort of, I guess, you know, mental health in mind when you're going to make a choice or a decision. Though I think those are like two of the biggest things.
Amazing. Well, yeah, I think that wraps this up perfectly. And I like that you brought up the mistakes thing because we're all going to do it. It happens. It's how we grow. It's how we learn. Unfortunately, I think we get hurt. Other people get hurt along the way. And that's never a fun thing to really like acknowledge or say that it was a good thing to happen in order for you to grow. But at the end of the day, I think everything that we go through does allow us to grow and does give us these new experiences to kind of like go through the next stage of life with. So it's an important part of the journey. Not an easy one, not a fun one, but I think it has to happen. And honestly, I am so glad we connected. I think we're like very similar in terms of podcasting and just our beliefs about the world. So thank you so much for coming on and for sharing all that you did today. I think you're an amazing advocate in person, and I'm excited to continue watching your journey grow and all your talks that you have coming up. Like, it's awesome to keep using your voice. So definitely keep going. And it's something you should be super, super proud of.
I really appreciate it. That's very kind of you to say. So thank you. It's been great sort of getting to know you now on my episode and then through this episode. And yeah, hopefully there's a lot more work we can do in the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Huge shout out to Ryan for coming on my podcast and for sharing his own personal experiences with mental health. I feel like when we hear these stories so often, especially on like a platform like mine that is geared towards mental health, we kind of forget how difficult it is and how serious it is to actually talk about these kinds of issues. So it's not an easy thing to do. And every time someone shares their story, I just want to give them a big hug, because to overcome something like mental illness and suicidal thoughts is truly remarkable and shows such a great deal of strength. Besides that, I honestly just think Ryan is such an amazing person who genuinely wants to make a positive change in the world, whether that's through his own podcasting platform or his mental health advocacy. I know he does a lot of behind the scenes work as well. Like, you know, when you're talking to a genuine, kind-hearted person, and that's how I've felt every single time I've connected with Ryan. And I'm honestly so grateful I've had the chance to do so, because like I said at the beginning, and like we said in the episode, like, we both feel like these are just everyday questions and concerns that people have, but nobody really talks about. And so hopefully by us having these conversations and by you consuming this type of information, it broadens your perspectives, it gives you new insight, it makes you feel more connected and like less alone dealing with these things by yourself. And so much of what we said, I just want to like highlight and emphasize, and there's too many things to even break down in this outro. So I think all I'm going to say to wrap this up is you need to prioritize you first and foremost. And social media can be a tricky place. It can be very positive, but also very negative. And I think we can use the media to keep ourselves informed of what's going on in the world, to maybe raise awareness about these things, to really just open our eyes beyond our current reality. But also, I think with all that going on your phone, like I said before, we do kind of lose sight of what we're really trying to do with this awareness, with this information, and that's when it gets really dangerous. So I guess just take everything with a grain of salt. Take the time to strengthen your own perspectives and understanding of what's going on, whatever that means to you, whether you're reading books, whether you're watching documentaries, whether you're donating behind the scenes. Not everything has to be posted. And I hope that's one of the key messages you take away from this episode, because it does cause so many people a large amount of distress, and I don't think that's the way it should be. So thank you so much for listening to this episode with Ryan. I hope you learned a lot, connected with what we were saying, whatever it was. Just I hope you're taking something away. I've also linked the episode that I did on Ryan's podcast in the episode notes. So please feel free to check that out if you liked listening to us talk and want a little bit more. That episode was more about my story and what I've gone through, so it's definitely worth the listen. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening on, and I will be back next Friday.